Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. We're going to party like it's episode 399. All right, bad joke. Anyway, welcome back to the program. As we talked about last week, this week we've got a great program. We've got some great explorations to do in terms of the circumpunct and the St. John, or the symbol of the two lines parallel connected with the circle and the point in the center. Again, there's great research out there on this particular symbol. I know lots of brothers who have really awesome presentations on this. And just recently, we had a wonderful presentation on this by illustrious Brother Hodap at my home lodge. You may have seen on his blog that he came out to visit us and to do a presentation. And huge thanks goes out to Brother Hodap for making the time to come out. The members of our lodge were ecstatic that he could come out. So just a big thanks goes out to him for that. But returning back to the idea of the circumpunct and the like, I've got an article that I did on the Midnight Freemasons a few years ago. I've got a piece from a lodge of research that I'll read as well. And then we'll also explore what Albert Mackey says about the symbol and some of its components. And then if I have the resources, I can also add in some comparative notes by other notable Masonic authors. So, without any further ado, we'll get right into all that right after this. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Bankers Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skincare, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruart, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. And as I said last week, we do have a new show sponsor, that is Franklin's Fortunes. It's a great card game that you can play with the family, ages 14 and up. Again, my kids play at 10 years old and 12 years old. They love it. I mention it every week that I can get them to stop playing Fortnite for 45 minutes to an hour while we play a round of this game. It's like Monopoly, but better. It teaches you life skills, and the values and quotes from Benjamin Franklin are in the game. A lot of fun. One of the things that's great about it, too, as you heard me just say, 40, 45-minute games, and the game has a definite ending, which is nice, and there's no ambiguity in terms of when the game ends or who wins or whatever. It's a really great game. Go to our website, WCYpodcast.com, hover over more, click on Franklin's Fortunes, click the link there to go to the website where you can buy it, and use the promo code WCY, all caps, for $5 off your order. You help out yourself by teaching some great virtues. You help out the brother who invented the game, and you help out this program. So thank you very much. So first and foremost, let's check out what Albert Mackey says about, first of all, the Saints John, because the Saints John, in the symbol of the circumpunct with the two parallel lines, those two parallel lines are said to have represented, in ancient times, our first Grand Master Hiram and Solomon, but then they are reintegrated as St. John the Baptist and St. John the Evangelist. So, St. John the Baptist, from Mackey's Encyclopedia, quote, "One of the patron saints of Freemasonry, and, at one time, indeed, the only one, the name of St. John the Evangelist having been introduced subsequent to the 16th century. His festival occurs on the 24th of June and is very generally celebrated by the Masonic fraternity. Galcho, Ahiman Razan, page 150, says that the, quote, stern integrity of St. John the Baptist, which included him to forego every minor consideration in discharging the obligations he owed to God, the unshaken firmness with whom he met martyrdom rather than betray his duty to his master, his steady reproval of vice and continued preaching of repentance and virtue make him a fit patron of the Masonic institution," end quote. The Charter of Cologne says, quote, "We celebrate annually the memory of St. John, the forerunner of Christ and patron of our community," end quote. The Knights Hospitaller also dedicated their order to him, and the ancient expression of our instructions, which speaks of, quote, Lodge of the Holy Saints John, St. John of Jerusalem, end quote, probably refers to the same saint. Krauss, in his book, page 295 to 305, gives abundant historical proofs that the earliest Freemasons adopted St. John the Baptist and not St. John the Evangelist as their patron. It is worthy of note that the Grand Lodge of England was revived on St. John the Baptist Day in 1717, Constitution 1738, page 109, and that the annual feast was kept on that day until 1725, when it was held for the first time on the Festival of the Evangelist. See page 119 of the above edition. Laurie says, in his History of Freemasonry, page 152, that the Scottish Freemasons always kept the festival of the Baptist until 1737, when the Grand Lodge changed the time of the annual election to St. Andrew's Day. So that's what he says about St. John the Baptist. Notice June 24th as the day of the celebration. So we're in June right now. This is why we're going into this and why the topic for this week. Of St. John the Evangelist, not quite as long of an entry, but he says, one of the patron saints of Freemasonry, whose festival is celebrated on the 27th of December. His constant admonition in his epistles to the cultivation of brotherly love and the mystical nature of his apocalyptic visions have been perhaps the principal reasons for the veneration paid to him by the craft. Notwithstanding a well-known tradition, all documentary evidence shows that the connection of the name of the Evangelist with the Masonic order is to be dated long after the 16th century, before which time St. John the Baptist was exclusively the patron saint of Freemasonry. The two are, however, now always united, for reasons set forth in the article of the Dedication of Lodges, which we see. So, pretty cool there, just some background on these two saints. Now, what's interesting, we dive deeper, is those two dates. You know, they represent summer and winter solstices, which harkens all the way back even further, right, to the beginnings of religion that we have, man's fascination with the stars, man's fascination with the precession of planets, and we noticed things, and we wrote them down, and we said, this is when the sun does this, and this is when the moon does this, and these things all came about through stories, and they were promulgated this way, and this is how we end up with the allegory that rolls through the expanse of human existence, and has given us so much of the religions that we operate on today. And a lot of times we forget that these are allegories and not literal translations or literal meanings. So very interesting to see. This is just a wonderful example of this. Now, of the point within a circle, there are approximately 10 matches within Mackey's work that has the exact words point within a circle. So let's check out just a few of those. So the first comes up under the section on parallel lines. It says, in every well-regulated lodge is found a point within a circle, which circle is bordered by two perpendicular parallel lines. These lines are representative of St. John the Baptist and St. John the Evangelist, the two great patrons of Freemasonry to whom our lodges are dedicated, and who are said to have been, quote-unquote, perfect parallels in Christianity as well as Freemasonry. In those English lodges which have adopted the union system established by the Grand Lodge of England in 1813, and where the dedication is, quote-unquote, to God and His service, the lines parallel represent Moses and Solomon. As a symbol, the parallel lines are not to be found in earlier instructions of Freemasonry, though Oliver defines the symbol on the authority of what he calls the quote-unquote old lectures. It is not to be found any anterior to Preston, and even he refers to no parallelism of the two Saints John. Another point comes up under the mention for phallic worship. So we have a few paragraphs on this, but the last one is the one which mentions the point within a circle. And this says, the union of these two as the generative and producing principles of nature in one compound figure was the most usual of representation. Here we undoubtedly find the remote origin of the point within a circle, an ancient symbol which was first adopted by the old sun worshippers and then by the ancient astronomers as a symbol of the sun surrounded by the earth or the universe, the sun as the generator and the earth as the producer, and afterward modified in its signification and incorporated in as a part of the symbolism of Freemasonry. So this allusion to the monad, or the union of male and female. Next, so what's interesting about that is, we have between the solstices, between the Saints John days, the union which springs forth things, nature, birth, new birth, this kind of thing. Pretty interesting there. But we'll move on to the next section. The actual entry for point within a circle is more lengthy, but we're going to read it in its entirety. Point within a circle. As knowledge of the customs and guilds, fraternities, churches, and of popular customs in the Middle Ages is increased, it becomes ever more evident that the two Saints John days were in everybody's mind, the two fixed points of the year, and that where we measure time in our minds from New Year's Day, St. John the Evangelist Day was equivalent to it, they measured it from two extremes. One, the shortest day in winter, the other, the longest day in summer. The early prominence of these two days in Masonic customs need not, therefore, mean that the days were chosen for their religious significance, rather, may mean that they were chosen for their convenience as a calendar. It is doubtful if Masons ever thought of the Saints John as their patron saints until a late period. From the records of the Masonic companies, as noted on another page in this supplement, some of them took St. Thomas as their patron. The monitorial lectures make it plain that the two parallel lines represent the Saints John, Evangelist, and Baptist, not in their theological significance, but in their sense as a calendar. The days named after those saints, rather than the saints themselves, are denoted. Since those days were the two extremes of the year, the sun is correctly represented as swinging in its circuit between them, for it cannot move south, this side, of the fixed point of the day named for the Evangelist, nor go north beyond the fixed point of the day represented by the Baptist. The two days are the limits of the circle. Therefore, the circle is shown set between the lines. The point within the circle represents the year, a year of work, a year out of man's life. At least it does if the history of its use is a true guide to its symbolic meaning. To follow that guide is not to narrow the symbolism down to a mere fact in a calendar, but is to canalize it and to hold it fast to its Masonic meaning, lest commentators wander off into regions that have no connection with Freemasonry. So there you have yet another example of where this kind of seems to come from in terms of its astrological significance. Now what I'd like to do is to read a short piece that I did on the Midnight Freemason several years ago. It was actually presented to my home lodge on August 19th, 2013 as Lodge Education. And Cast No Shadow by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert Johnson. What is light? Of course, we may think of it in the basic way. Illuminations making things visible so that we may traverse lands, read and see the things around us. Things that are necessary and some things which are just captivating, perhaps best described as those things which make us contemplate the glorious works of creation. The oldest pictograph for that light is, of course, the sun. It is that which fixes the duration of seasons and years. Light brings us much joy, and not just because it brings bright and a sunny day. We must consider the gifts that the sun brings: crops, a habitable planet, even the gift of good mood. Exposure to the sun increases the body's production of vitamin D, which, according to studies, promotes a sense of mental well-being, a literal sunny disposition. It is no wonder our ancient ancestors, including some brethren, worshipped the sun. It only makes sense. We as Freemasons may see light a different way. We think of it as synonymous with knowledge. To be illuminated is to know something, perhaps to be wise to something which is lost unto the rest. And this is the way of our craft, to illuminate brothers to a new way of living, a new way of seeing, and a new way of hearing. To change direction, but for only a moment, let us consider the space in our degrees and where we are taught the meaning of the circumpunct, the point within the circle. We are told that the point represents man and the circle, well, that represents our boundary of our scope of concern. What about the other areas in our Masonic system? In many fellowcraft lectures, in countless jurisdictions, the point is described and explained in the quote, "A point is a figure without dimension." If a point is a representation of a man, then a man is without dimension. This is almost insulting. However, let us consider the following. The point represents a man indeed who is without dimension. A mere spot on a piece of paper or indent in the sand or dirt, until that is, he grows. Next, let us look again at the circumpunct, a point or a man surrounded by the circle. But again, what does the circle represent? Perhaps not your boundary, but instead its original meaning, the sun. Now we have come all the way around. The circumpunct, a point within a circle. A seed surrounded by the sun. A man surrounded by the light of knowledge. When the point in the center becomes so big that it lapses equally around the circle, the man, you, now become the light. If it becomes your duty to be that light which shines on the seedlings or the new brothers, you must shine bright, to be there to comfort, to guide, and to nourish the new brothers' growth. Let that light, let your light be so bright that you illuminate all things. And from you, let no shadow be cast. So this was my attempt at diving in more symbolically in a subjective nature. I've taken personal thoughts about what we should be doing, educating our members and being there for our brothers, and I've applied that to the circumpunct, the point within the circle bordered by the two parallel lines. So again, this is just another interpretation of. But to be sure, this doesn't have any weight to it. It's not like this is what it's supposed to be. This is just my, again, subjective opinion or how I thought about it when I contemplated the symbol back in 2013. When we actually look at the symbolism, we can actually get much, much deeper, as Mackey alluded to, diving into the realms of the astrological almost. Now, before we move on, let's hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison with this week's Masonic Minute.
The Grand Lodge of Missouri has, on occasion, conducted surveys asking the brothers, among other things, what they want from Masonry. It probably won't shock you to discover the number one thing on the list is Masonic education. So, hats off to the Grand Lodge of Missouri. It listened to the brothers, went to work, and came up with a Masonic education program. It works this way. On a regular basis, the Grand Lodge sends an information packet to each lodge secretary. Included within that packet is a document containing a piece on Freemasonry. Then, at a stated meeting, the secretary, lodge education officer, or any brother can read the piece and perhaps conduct a discussion afterward. Note that the program also has the added advantage that lodges across the state are all working on the same subject simultaneously. There you go. Masonic education handed to you on a silver platter. What more could you ask for? I'll tell you exactly what. You could ask for the lodges to make use of it. I attend my share of lodge meetings. While reliable sources tell me There are some lodges that do. I have never sat in a lodge that uses the material. So let's recap. The number one thing that brothers want is Masonic education. The Grand Lodge provides it, and generalizing now, the brothers don't use it. It's a bit of a paradox, isn't it? Maybe the next survey should ask, what do you really want? So I have a suggestion. If you want Masonic education more than anything, appoint yourself your own personal education officer. Read, research, write, learn everything you can, but don't stop there. Make a commitment to take it to the lodge. It doesn't take much. Maybe start by reading an article from the Midnight Freemasons blog, or maybe an excerpt from Midnight Freemason founder Todd Creason's famous American Freemasons book, or some other source. Likely if not, just a few minutes on a subject will spark a discussion. If my experience is any indication, your brothers will thank you for doing it. Try it. Just a few minutes of Masonic education can turn a mundane meeting into a memorable meeting. If that works, take it a step further. Ask your brothers to do the same. Maybe think about upping your game and turning it into a presentation. Take it to other lodges. Ask those brothers to do the same. Let's start a movement. Before you know it, we might be swimming in Masonic education. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Well, many thanks to illustrious Brother Harrison for his outstanding work. If you like this, please head on over to the YouTube channel where you can subscribe, catch the video of this very episode of the Masonic Minute, and you can also check out the bookstore on our website, wcypodcast.com, where you can find the books that Steve has written, and I guarantee you when you read those books in your head, you're going to have Steve reading them to you. It's awesome. So this piece comes from the Universal Freemasonry website and is written by Pamela McDown on April 30th, 2019. So it's a newer article and it's called Two Masonic Pillars, Guardian of the Temple. Now in this, the reason why it caught my eye, I'm thinking two parallel lines, the opening, the pillars, the opening of the temple. Could there be something there? But let's see what they say. Two Masonic Pillars, Guardians of the Temple, Pamela McDown. I have a sense that every person on this planet is being tested at this time. This impression came to me recently while watching the tragic burning of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. The fire blazing impacted the world greatly. How could this happen? The faces of the French people singing the Ave Maria, some while kneeling and weeping, was unforgettable. I knew in my heart that they were not just responding to a building on fire. There was something deeper going on, but what? One of the most impactful images was the flames bursting forth in front of the twin pillars of the cathedral, which both survived. The spire and roof, however, burned down. As a Freemason, I have learned the symbolic importance of the two pillars, featured prominently at the entrance of Masonic temples. Since the beginning of time, sacred and mysterious places have been guarded by two such pillars acting as guardians at the gateway into the unknown realms. It seems to me that the burning of Notre Dame was an extreme situation, but throughout history, we could name many more such situations. Freemasons are familiar with the lessons associated with tales of destruction, especially of King Solomon's Temple. Do these tragic events point to a dramatic change in human consciousness? Are we being challenged to look deeply into each and every situation on the earth to see what is really taking place? Are we being tested? Does an examination of the two Masonic pillars give any insight? Historicity in the Bible. In Freemasonry, the pillars of the temple are called B and J. The left-hand pillar on, or north pillar, is named Boaz, B, which means in him is strength. The right-hand pillar, or south pillar, is named Jachin, J, which means he establishes. Now, these two items are established within the Holy Bible. There's nothing Masonic about them, really. Back to the paper. The two pillars were among the many notable features of Solomon's temple. I found a study of the physical characteristics to be very interesting. The Bible deals with the subject in several different passages. In regards to the material that they were made of, 1 Kings implies the pillars were solid brass, but another interpretation, Jeremiah 52, they were said to be hollow. They were probably made in parts cast in clay molds. The Masonic lecture says the following: these pillars cast hollow, the better to serve as a safe deposit for the archives of masonry against all conflagration and inundations. The pillars were built to be enormous, almost 30 feet tall and 6 feet thick. While the biblical account does not provide a clear picture of what the capitals or chapiters looked like, it does indicate they were highly ornate with leaves of lily work, network, and chains of pomegranate. Why were the pillars put there to begin with? It is tempting to presume that their purpose was to hold up the roof of the portico. However, in the view of today's design precedents, they were probably merely ornamental to give a dynamic entrance to the plaza. What about the orientation of the pillars? From which direction did one see Jachin? On the right and Boaz on the left? From the outside looking in or from the inside looking out? The most accepted and Masonic theory placed right pillar Jachin in the south and the left pillar Boaz in the north. Perhaps the placement had a ceremonial purpose. The king receiving an official position next to Jachin and the high priest next to Boaz. When the first temple was destroyed, the pillars did not survive. They were not replaced with the building of the second temple. Many viewed this as a travesty, as the operative building masons in those days went to great lengths to memorialize pillars into architecture for posterity. The temple is said to be destroyed twice, captured and recaptured 44 times, besieged 23 times, and attacked 52 times. The edifice was rebuilt twice. Since its destruction, no researcher has been able to solve the innumerable contradictions from the various biblical texts. This leads a person to look beyond the physical appearance to a more symbolic significance. What then do the pillars represent? Speculatively, eternal in the heavens. The most common theory among Freemasons is that the pillars Boaz and Jachin represent what is known in Eastern philosophy as the pairs of opposites. A Freemason is taught to balance the opposing forces of his own nature by aligning his or her own thoughts, feelings, and actions with the grand plan. He learns through allegory that physical death is only of the body, the form, nature, which according to the Masonic philosophy will be reborn again in another form. Each individual Mason is said to be the symbol of a spiritual temple, a temple not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Brother W. L. Wilmshurst refers to the opposites of quote-unquote good and evil, light and darkness, active and passive, positive and negative, yes and no, outside and inside, man and woman, and so on. Brother C. W. Ledbetter claims that the two pillars correlate to Dharma and Karma. He says that in the quote-unquote harmonious workings of these two laws, a man may attain the stability and strength required to reach the circle within which a master mason cannot err. End quote. Life and death are also represented as pairs of opposites in the pillar symbolism. Sometimes the death of the form nature is necessary to remove that which is old and hindering. This later followed by the clear shining forth of the birth of the constructive forces of new ideas and principles. Why do we find destruction frightening then? It is my opinion our response against destruction can be our greatest error. Some creations by mankind need to be destroyed. If we resist the destroying angels, we miss the opportunities of healthy cycles of growth. Builders long ago never questioned that they lived and worked under the ever-present watchful eye of the great architect of the universe. Today, many people dismiss that way of thinking as rubbish, perhaps. In the simplest of terms, my sense is that human labor alone did not build and rebuild the Temple of Solomon. It will not rebuild the Notre Dame Cathedral. Faith and reverence for the divine are the lasting ingredients carved into any edifice. We are being tested in these difficult times on our worthiness as builders. In balancing the two pillars of our own nature, we are guarding every moral and social virtue. Quote, the two great pillars which stand at the entrance invite the initiate into its mysteries, so noble in proportion, so intricate in design, so beautiful to see. They seem to keep solemn watch above the scheme, as if to to throw a hush of awe about the soul that would amount to the upper room of the spirit, end quote. Brother H. L. Haywood. All right, so what I found interesting with this piece actually is that while it returns to the idea of the Temple of Solomon and the pillars, there is this idea of the balance and the opposites, which is very much also in line with what the two parallel lines are. Do you guys think that there's more significance between the pillars and the parallel lines with the circumpunct in the center? Is there more there? Let me know what you think on Facebook. I try to respond to them all and repost them if they're not quite visible enough for other people to see. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts about this concept. Many thanks to Pamela McDown for allowing us to read this paper that she published on April 30th, 2019 on the Universal Freemason website, which you can find at universalfreemasonry.org. And they have a great blog here, actually, so if you guys ever want to see some slightly deeper than the normal type Masonic blog symbology and the kind of exploration into deeper aspects, I think this is a wonderful website to come across and to be able to read from. So again, our thanks to them for allowing us to read from the website. We'll have a link back to their website, and you guys can check that out if you can't remember the web address. That's it for this week. I want to thank everybody so much for coming out to Esotericon. If you're listening to this, it means I'm probably on my way home from Esotericon. I had to record this episode in advance of the event. I'm assuming it went off amazing because, you know, Freemasons always come together to put something great together. This is a preemptive thank you to everybody who came out. And I think next week we're probably going to talk a little bit about how Esotericon went. We'll probably have some additional content there. And look forward in the future to an article that we're going to read from the Colorado Freemason. Brother Day allowed us to read an entire paper that he published in the latest issue, and I'm really excited about that. And he doesn't know it yet, but I think I'm going to try to bend his arm to come on the show to talk about it a little bit, and maybe talk about his lodge, because he has a unique lodge that he's a member of as well. With all that, I want to say thank you so much for listening, thank you so much for supporting this program, and we'll talk to you next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.